Welcome to Equity Gurus, A Closer Look, where you, the investor, get to listen as Chris Perry grills the best and the brightest in the corporate sector to help you find out who's the wheat and who's the chaff. Listen in.
The opinions expressed on this podcast are not necessarily shared by people who are wrong.
My name is Jevin Werbus. I'm chairman of Cobalt Power Group. We are CPO on the TSX Venture, and we're actively pursuing in the cobalt sector.
So, Jevin, cobalt. So I saw the lithium thing blow up in early 2016, and then when the lithium thing started to slow, cobalt started to become the next blow up. Now I'm getting calls from manganese companies. I'm getting graphite calls again. Like, what's become very apparent to me right now is that it doesn't really matter what part of the lithium ion chain you're in, there's interest in everybody. Is that something you're finding?
Yeah, I'm starting to see a lot of trickle out. The lithium space was a hot sector, especially when the mining industry was really struggling, and all the other commodities, especially precious metals and even base metals. Cobalt is a very, very key commodity towards the lithium ion batteries, as is graphite. But cobalt, you can't get it everywhere. 60% of the supply of cobalt is coming out of the DRC. And it's starting to get the nickname of blood cobalt, like in back in the day of the blood diamonds.
Right.
They've got child labor issues going on out there. And, you know, Tesla, the Gigafactory, they're making the mandate of being that they're going to take the cobalt for the Gigafactory, and that'll be coming out of North America.
So in order for that to happen, there has to be some cobalt in North America. Where would you find cobalt in North America presently? Where would you find it being produced?
As far as we know, nowhere. There's whispers that there are a few small places that are producing, but as of yet, we haven't put our finger on exactly where these places are. So there is cobalt in Idaho, but then there's the, you know, Ontario has some cobalt in there. Particularly, there's the place called Cobalt Ontario, and hence the name. When I went out there, I actually took a trip out there in early September, after I had consummated the relationship with one of our close contacts out of Cobalt, who was born and raised there. And I said to him, I said, is there cobalt in Ontario? Because it's well known for its silver coming out of the region there. Mm-hmm. And he laughed and he says, why do you think we called it cobalt? And the old saying was they would chase the cobalt veins to get to the silver. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we're sitting in a position where we've got a very nice assembled land package, all contiguous. It's butt up against the Agnico Eagle Deerhorn mine, which was a silver cobalt producer. Mainly it was silver because of the fact that when they were producing, cobalt wasn't the metal of interest, and especially for the reasons that they're being looked at today.
Historically, much the same as lithium historically, cobalt was something that kind of got in the way of the good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, the points when you look at a lot of the cobalt production out of Cobalt, Ontario, it was because of the fact that the silver was so high grade. I mean, it was nicknamed the sidewalks of silver out there. But at the end of the day, the cobalt was ignored. So you've got some stockpiles that are sitting around the area with cobalt. It's cobalt bloom. It's a nice pink looking rock, and you can be fairly confident that there is cobalt in there. We have four shafts on our project. The main one that we're concentrating on is on our Smith Cobalt, which is contiguous to the Deerhorn, and we've had the opportunity to sample it. And so when we're sampling muck piles, that's it's not a waste pile. It's what's come from the underground while they were looking for the silver, and they would just toss out all what they would consider maybe waste, but it's muck. And in there it's rich with bloom, and there is cobalt numbers coming out of there.
So if I'm your average hipster doofus, and I don't like mining because it leaves big holes in the ground and lots of toxic chemicals, and, you know, we should end all mining tomorrow. But I like lithium ion batteries. You know, there's definitely a conflict there between people who want to do anything they can to prevent the environment from degrading, but also a part of that is not getting oil and gas anymore and not building new nuclear power plants. And so, for someone who's never actually invested in a mine before, but likes the idea of maybe pulling something out of the ground that prevents it from happening in other different places, like, what do you say to that person?
Mining is definitely something that isn't really going to go away, but you know, looking in the Cobalt Ontario region, there's so much underground workings in that area. There's already so much, if you want to look at it from a greens perspective, it's a, you know, there is disturbance already there. But the nice part is that it's already in place. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is underground mining. You're going to go underground and you're going to, you know, do a lot less disturbance than what you would do from, you know, starting from scratch in a nice piece of pasture that looks beautiful. Right. It's already advanced to that point. I mean, there's no doubt about it. You have to move forward, but you want to move forward as obviously clean and prudent as possible for the environmental side of things.
And if you're not pulling cobalt out of the ground here, you're going to be pulling it out of the ground somewhere, right?
Yes, some,
at the moment, that means digging holes in people's kitchens in the Congo and dropping kids down on ropes with sticks.
Absolutely. And I mean, the nice part about where we're at is that it's mining friendly. We do have rules and regulations across Canada towards mining. And you know what? It's a tough protocol to follow. Because they've set the bar so high environmentally, you know, disturbance on the earth obviously has to be rectified, and you know, when you do these things, you need to have a environmental plan in place for when you are done, or if your mine runs out of ore and whatnot. Mm-hmm. You need to have a plan in place to put that earth back to how it was in the best order that it as it started. So you know,
so in your case, that means closing a hole.
Closing a hole, and being that the hole's already there,
right.
If you went and took a walk out there, Chris, and you know, saw these shafts, they are covered over.
Right.
You can access them, but it does take a bit of work.
I've seen pictures. There's literally like trees growing out of the shaft holes.
Yeah, I mean, it starts. I mean, the Mother Nature is very resilient, and she likes to, you know, revert back to how she was at the end of the day. And you know, the there is trees growing out of the holes, and you know, it starts to rejuvenate itself back. But obviously, with the assistance of us after you know, miners are done and production's done, we as miners, and I think globally, even no matter what commodity you're in, we always want to get the earth back to you know, it's good standard.
So we want to get to a place where solar panels can be useful 24 hours a day rather than just when it's sunny. So we need big lithium ion batteries to make that possible. Same with wind turbines and geothermal. So obviously, no matter how environmentally activist you are, you want as much lithium ion out there as possible. So this is, to me, this is the trade-off. You know, you dig a hole in the ground in Cobalt, Ontario to get some cobalt. You dig some graphite out of the ground in Alaska. You put it all together with some lithium, and you don't have to then do what we currently have been doing for the last 50 years, which is massive mining just to keep the coal fires burning.
Absolutely. I mean, and that's the standpoint. This is the new movement. I mean, again, everybody's got electric cars. You look at London. I mean, they've got the pollution scales that they run out there, and so they have limits. Mm-hmm. And it's a yearly limit. Within 5 days of 2017, London's already blown up their whole entire pollution level.
Jeez.
And you know, so these are things that need to be done in order to protect the future for, mm-hmm, for my era, maybe more so my children's era and the grandchildren's era. There's a way to be able to start, you know, cleaning things up, but it does take, you know, it gets worse before it gets better in that sense.
Sure.
If you can keep on developing these lithium-ion batteries and start getting all the components that are necessary for it, I'm sure with the genius that's out there, they're only getting better.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, I mean, we do have to do this no matter how we look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the key is
to... It's mining to save the planet.
Yeah, absolutely. Now we are mining to save the planet.
So getting to the lithium ion scene, I've heard a few CEOs say it should really be called a graphite ion battery, since that's the majority of what's in there. But every element that's in that battery, as I understand it, is not produced locally except for the lithium.
Yep, the lithium is, I mean, locally the lithium would be in the Nevada, obviously.
Yep.
That's there's the main producer out there. I had the liberty of taking a look at that lithium field. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
But that being said, yeah, I mean, there's nothing really natively produced here. You know, you do have a lot of graphite out in Ontario. As we saw about 5-6 years back, you had that graphite
Pencil
space.
Central.
Yeah, Pencil Central, exactly. And you know what? Pencils get given away. So, you know, it's more fishing rod central and
right.
whatnot. But again, each component is very, very important towards the battery. And it's a matter of being able to localize the sources and you know, keep a mainstream coming from areas that we know have, again, the environmental regulations in place to make it a cleaner place at the end of the day.
So there's obviously a lot of companies that have got into the energy metals business in the last year or two, specifically maybe in the last 3-4 months. The challenge to me is going to be which of those companies not necessarily have something in the ground, but which of them can get to a production standpoint quickly. Because certainly Elon Musk is not taking his foot off the gas anytime soon. So what's it going to take to get Cobalt Power Group's projects to a point where you're actually producing something that Elon can take off your hands?
Well, you know what? That's a good question. And, you know, when we look at what we're doing at this point, as cobalt, as we touched on, there isn't any real known producer here in North America. We are at the point where we need to explore and develop. Where they say you find a new mine is generally where there's an old mine.
Right.
And because of the fact that we are contiguous to the Agnico Deerhorn mine, we've de-risked it as much as we possibly can without putting putting the drill to the ground. But we do know that our land package is along the vein highway, as we call it, of the cobalt veins. We do know that there's at least four veins coming on to the Smith Cobalt. There could be upwards of 10. But everything we've done so far is we've flown Aeromag. We've just started doing IP, and that should be completed hopefully in the next 3 weeks. So what we do from that point there is we overlap those two maps and we take a good hard look at how the structures are in place. Now, I'm not the guy to do that. I'm not mm-hmm. the geologist, and I'm not the one that that could look at that map and tell you what you know where to go and how to do it. But I do have the technical team in place that have the pedigree in doing this. I mean, our president CEO, he's a PhD geo in structural geology. So he's a doctor of structural geology, and he's actively involved in looking at this because the Smith Cobalt is structural geology. With that in place, once this is done, I mean, we're drill ready. So at that point, we have to go out, we have to drill. We have to look at the, test the integrity of the lengths and the grades.
Mm-hmm.
We do have good ideas from our last sampling of grades that could potentially be coming out of there. And then it's a matter of building a resource. And then when you build that resource, you can start to familiarize yourself and get comfortable with an amount of cobalt you may be able to, deliver.
I've seen a few companies specifically in the gold space recently, that have moved away from the old business model when mining was, money was falling out of the sky, where you would drill, make the biggest resource you possibly could, and then go and raise your $1 billion to put it into play. Now we're getting a lot more companies that are saying, okay, well, we know in this particular area with what we've got, we can drill 3 or 4 times around this area and get a better idea. Or we can spend the money to fly outwards and see if we're actually sitting on a bonanza. What's your most likely strategy? Is it to go where you know the shiny stuff is and lock that down? Or is it to be a bit more sort of area specific and sort of see exactly how big things are before you get in there?
I think with us, I mean, we've assembled, again, a very, very attractive contiguous package based along the structural geology. Where we'd like to start testing the integrity of the Smith Cobalt. Let's see what's coming out of there. From there, we can expand out and start seeing how long this vein highway goes for.
Mm-hmm.
And if we are, moving outward, we'll start developing, obviously numbers that will be applied to a resource calculation. It does take a fair bit of drilling to do that, but the nice part about Cobalt Ontario is you've got the professionals all in place there. It's a mining town.
Sure.
And it's relatively inexpensive in relation to some of the bigger bigger drill programs that you have to do for other commodities.
Trying to drop a drill onto the side of a Chilean mountain range, you're just basically shipping it down the street.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, we've got roads all through our project, and our drive is about 15 minutes from Cobalt Ontario right to our project.
Okay.
So I mean, everything's in very good the infrastructure's in place, and it's very, very easy ground to navigate on. So I mean, for us, it's drill what we know and then continue stepping out and moving forward and seeing the size that we potentially have. Cobalt Power definitely has enough of a contiguous and sizable package that I think we could definitely move forward just from what we have.
Mm-hmm.
If something comes available where we have more data and know what's on the area that fits in with our whole entire package, we'd be more than happy to look at that. But I don't see the point of jumping from one spot, jumping to another spot.
Mm-hmm.
We are very confident in what we have. So now it's time to start testing it and hopefully building forward on a nice sizable resource after we drill.
This podcast is sponsored by Invictus MD Strategies, the first Canadian marijuana-related company to pay a dividend to investors. With a business concept that invests in, streamlines, and grows cannabis service companies, Invictus has shown extraordinary growth and a solid return on investment. For more, see ticker symbol IMH.C.
You're listening to the Equity.Guru podcast with your host, Chris Perry.
Do you need to raise money to make that happen?
We will raise some money. I mean, the drill program that we're looking at is probably, if we want to do 10 holes, it's probably inward of about $250,000 all in on the drilling side. And then obviously some contingency costs on top of that. But I mean, the company does have about $200,000 in there right now. We will look to raise, but at this point we could go do that and you know, still survive. Just it would just be drill hole dependent on how many we do and moving forward. But with the space and the way it's heating up, I think there's a good opportunity to be able to you know, capitalize and get out there and start developing this project.
One of the things that makes, I think, this opportunity really attractive from where I stand anyway, and my investor profile, is the fact that your company is worth about the same as a freestanding Vancouver home.
Like, yeah,
it is cheap. Like, you could basically you could sell something in Kerrisdale and take this whole damn company over. Like, how undervalued do you think the company is as it stands right now? Is it really just a factor of its newness, or is it just that the competitiveness in this space?
I think that, you know, a lot of people were asking, oh, why didn't you tell me about this long ago? Well, you know, I was camping this summer with my kids, and I was sitting there, and I was thinking Cobalt Power was used to be called Global Copper. And, you know, I feel that copper is going to become a very, very good metal, and it's going to start getting traction. It's going to be, I think, your base metal of choice. But I might have made that choice a little bit too early.
Right.
So I was camping, and, you know, I was talking with a good friend of mine, and he goes, Jeff, and he goes, I don't want to see you pulling your hair out next summer here while we're camping and trying to figure out what you're going to do with Global Copper. Well, what he didn't know was I'd spent the summer camping with my kids, and that's when I'd made that reach out to Cobalt Ontario.
Okay.
And you know, obviously I kept it very tight and quiet, but once I had made that phone call camping and started making the negotiations towards moving forward, I made the trip out there, and I wanted to make sure that what we're looking at was real. I wanted to make sure that we were able to grow on our land package and make some size that was geologically prudent. And so I spent a lot of time out there getting that all negotiated and tied up, in which at that time, I think a lot of guys were in that space starting to move that way, and they were getting, you know, making the noise. Yet,
right,
you know,
going to the market rather than going to the rock face.
Yeah, I didn't want to make the noise until I knew that I could secure these packages. And once they're secured, obviously, then you can announce them and you go tell the public. And as you know, November was a little bit harder on the markets, a little bit quieter. So as we were getting wind in our sails, you had, you know, tax loss selling, you had Christmas coming,
sure,
you had people traveling, you had 4 years of a terrible mining market where, you know, the attention span wasn't fully there yet.
Yeah.
And but as we've come into the new year, you can see that
just the last few months, it's gone crazy, and cobalt prices as well.
Yeah,
through the roof.
Yep, it's climbed up. I think we were at don't hold me to it, I think we were in the $11 range when we started this, and it's climbing in and upward to $17 a pound right
That's
now.
Crazy in such a short amount of time.
Yes, and I don't like to make predictions, but I don't think it's stopping here. I think it's going to keep on going.
So we've got a situation in the Congo that has been you know, well described. Every company that we've written about in the cobalt space, we make mention of the same situation. It's that you've got essentially a tyrannical dictatorship over there, where artisan miners, they're politely called, but really they're just people making a scratch dirt living, are sending kids down into holes and pulling out what is essentially a toxic metal at that point. And then sending it off to guys from China that process it, give them pennies on the dollar, and then send it to Samsung.
Yep.
Then Samsung phones are mysteriously exploding.
Yeah.
I wonder what's gone wrong with that supply chain for that to happen. But
well, yeah, it's wrong from the starting gate right to the finish gate.
Right.
Nobody's winning there.
So Samsung obviously took a big beating because of that, and other companies are sort of, you know, holding their breath it doesn't happen to them as well. Is there any company that's currently doing big business in the electronics world that isn't having to scratch their cobalt out from South Africa? I mean, I know there's Australian mines and there's a couple dotted around Europe, but the vast majority we're talking about is coming from blood cobalt. For
yeah, 60% of it is coming from there.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy. And I mean, I think that North America, as we keep exploring here and keep moving forward, all the companies out there,
We're 160 minutes interview away from all those companies having to shut that down, I would imagine.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it can't go on like that. I mean, the DRC already has its history of issues.
Right.
You know, I don't think you're going to see many Vancouver companies or Canadian companies
let alone even American companies going out there and exploring for cobalt. It's not a friendly place. The whole situation in itself is, I'm going to go and say, it's pretty disgusting.
Right.
What we're doing here is we're doing our part, and it's moving forward to try and sway away people from trying to do the deals out there, and then hopefully somebody can step in here and stop it. But the history of the DRC, it speaks for itself. They've never stopped it. They've never been able to stop it.
There's no incentive for them to do anything any different way other than public boycotts of where it's coming from.
No, absolutely. And I mean Samsung did take a hit for that, but hey, they're gonna have to start rethinking too, because phones blowing up is one thing, but then you got children that are supplying your metals into your phones and in your products. You know what? You got a big long think ahead of you.
And people are having to hide their phones when they go on planes. Like, that's not a good selling point.
No.
iPhone or the one I have to hide in my pants?
You know? Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And even then, when you get past the kids scratching around in holes, you've got the Chinese side of it where, I was talking to some graphite guys, and I'm sure that cobalt's the same way, where they've got a lot of mines out there just grabbing bits and pieces and different grades, and then it all comes into one big bag, and then they process the whole thing. And if you're a Samsung or a Mitsubishi, you get your 12 container loads full of graphite. One of them is great, the next one is unusable, the next one is okay, the next one is super great.
Yeah,
you want to be able to rely on your supply chain to be A1, and I think that's where Tesla is really sort of focused on, like, determining that this has to happen out of North America. It can't be a South America thing, it can't be a Chinese thing, it can't be an African thing.
No, and that's 100% right, because and that's the key behind us moving forward. I mean, we've done everything we possibly can to start defining our drill targets, but that's where you drill. You drill, you come up with a resource calculation. You use independent firms to do that. Mm-hmm. I like to use the best firms you possibly can, because when you take that document and show it to people, they want to know that somebody independently looked at it.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody that's very capable and knows the mining space very well can deliver and say, here's what we've got. Now, what do you do at that point? Do you go and take the leap of faith, assemble your team, and go put it into production? My team's good enough to do that, but in the same boat...
Do you think you're actually going to have to go to production? Like, the way the industry is, I imagine someone's going to come along, and either an end user or a mid-range, mid-major, it's going to come along and just start snapping these properties up.
Well, and they will. I'm just trying to figure out what major is going to be stepping into the cobalt space at this point, because nobody likes to show their cards. And if you start getting whispers of one, they like to keep the valuations where it's attractive for them to come in. And, I always like buying cars for less than wholesale.
So do you see a point where, I love a company for me where the market cap is like $2 to $5 million, because any good news is likely to catapult that thing to a double. Whereas, if you're invested in Tesla, goes from $1.30 to $1.40, it's better than your mutual fund, but, it's still not going to put the kids through college. At the current market cap for you, do you see enough news likely to come through where, the current value of the company will just be, unimaginable in 6 months' time?
Well, I mean, being the chairman, I can only say so much. But I'm also in the position where, we are going to start drilling this project, hopefully by April, May.
That puts you ahead of a lot of your competitors straight away, because a lot of people go by the maxim of you don't want to spoil a good piece of ground by sticking holes in it.
Yeah, well, it's the drill it and kill it scenario, but I'm not here for a fly-by-night and then move on to the next commodity. I'm here to look at building a cobalt project. If it doesn't work out, I'm very confident with my team, so I don't think that's going to be the case. But if it doesn't...
You might find a new vein of silver.
Well, I mean, that's the nice part, too. People cringe, but it's a secondary metal. I mean, it's a pretty nice metal to have in there, right? It's a precious metal at that point, and we do know it's there, that's for sure.
And you've got a bunch of shafts there. Like, a lot of companies at this stage, they might say, well, we've got one shaft, or we've got a piece of ground where maybe a shaft may one day be. You've already got a bunch of access to this ground. Like, you're able to drill in places where you're fairly sure there's going to be something on the other end.
Well, we know historically that there was stuff there. Mm-hmm. We do have numbers. It is nice to have that assurity and knowing that there is potential there, and being that we have sampled and we have looked at the muck piles that have come out of the shafts, it gives us assurity that there was cobalt there. So I have no reason to believe that somebody's gone in there sneakily and took it all out of there while we were sleeping.
It's not generally the Ontario way.
No, exactly. So, but we are concentrating on the first shaft, and that's one on the Smith cobalt. And as we move forward, again, it's part of the stepping out of our own package and starting to build and test the integrity of the size.
Right.
So
you're a reasonably young guy.
Yep.
Like I am, I say. If you had never invested in mining before, what are the things that, that you think people should look for in a junior mining deal that, you know, if this is your debut, if this is the first time, if you decided, yes, I'm down with the lithium ion thing, I'm down with investing in a local company, doing business locally, these guys are small, so there's a high upside. But what are the things, you know, aside from your opportunity, just in general, if you're investing in mining for the first time, like what should you be looking for?
Well, you want to look at the, obviously, the management team. You want to look at the, I mean, in the mining space, you really want to look at the technical team. You want to see what sort of pedigree they come with. You want to look at where the jurisdiction is. Is it mining friendly? You want to look at the structure of the company. You know, is there hundreds and hundreds of millions of shares out? Because, I mean, when you're investing there, you know, you may be able to get it up a penny, but for every time someone wants to buy it a penny higher, someone wants to sell it a penny lower.
Right.
But, you know, is the company funded? Is the company got an asset enough with enough validity to it to fund it?
Right.
Is it in a good space?
So a lot of CEOs of mining outfits have very nice suits, and their tennis game is fantastic.
Yep.
They don't necessarily, you know, get out there on the side of the mountain and make sure that the drills are going. You don't strike me as the country club CEO or a country club president. You know, every time I've seen you, you look like you've just come from the side of the mountain.
I just roll out of bed. Yeah. No, I'm just kidding.
What's the reality? Are you a guy who likes to get in there and get his hands dirty and make sure that, you know, he knows the lay of the land and which angle the drills are going in?
I do. I'm the type of guy that says, you know, if your president and CEO or your chairman can't say that they've stepped on the property, mm-hmm. You know, unless they're, you know, in their 90s and then they're not able to handle the hillside.
Right.
I'm a guy that likes to go there. I like to get my hands dirty. I like to be able to come and tell you what I've seen, not what I've heard.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I started in the mines at 17, doing exploration outside of Logan Lake, and continued on to live in the Reno, Nevada for a year, working with drillers out in the probably one of the biggest gold producing regions in the world. And then I finished off the physical side of things, rebuilding a mill up in the Kootenays. So I've seen a little bit of everything, and I'm a guy that loves the outdoors. I love mm-hmm. being outdoor. I love, you know, looking, exploring, and learning. And I'm learning every day because I'm not the most technical guy on earth.
Right.
But when I've got some of the best technical guys around me that are actually quite good teachers, you know, I learn more and more every
day. There's not that many mining execs who've come out of mining proper. You know, they're actually getting their hands dirty. Have you noticed that there are things that you'll spot that maybe another guy who's ensconced in a glass fish tank downtown won't? When you look at a project or a potential project, being somebody who came out of, you know, the bottom end going up rather than top end looking down, like, is there elements of a project that with that experience that you look at and you can say, oh, you know what, that's not something I want to get into, or it is something I want to get into?
Yeah, you know, again, I do revert back to my technical team, but I do look at a lot of
and it's the guys on the ground will tell you what's up. Like, they, you know, they'll spot things because they're there every day that most execs won't ever be a party to.
Yeah, and if you have issues, I mean, you know, I'll walk a whole property. I'm more than happy to walk a whole property. I get out there, and I love getting my hands dirty with everybody. As far as looking from, you know, the fish glass, again, there's a lot of good, capable CEOs out there, and
sure.
Some of them have really great educations. Some of them went to the school of hard rocks, as I did.
Someone went to the school of pumps and dumps.
Yeah, and I mean, hey, those happen.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate. Hopefully, as we move forward, regulations are so heavy nowadays that I feel bad for guys that want to venture in that area.
Mm-hmm.
But it's about being, you know, true to your word. If you're moving forward, if I'm gonna say I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how you gauge a person. And, you know, I can tell you everything you want to hear right now, but the test of time is where, you know, you realize who you're dealing with and you realize what we're doing. And,
mm-hmm.
and if we keep developing and moving forward the way I say we're going to, that's going to be delivered to you. So
for sure. Pleasure talking to you, man.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. I appreciate you taking the time.
You know, in the mining business, there's so many different kinds of project, even within a certain sector. You know, like there's guys who are just like, they just want to scratch on the bottom. There's guys who want to open out at the top. Every now and then you get a project where you kind of think, these guys are just a hard scrabble crew that are going to take a nice piece of rock and do the best with it. And those are the guys that, you know, if I'm telling someone who's investing in mining for the first time, those are the guys you want to get behind, because no one sees them coming. You get them cheap, and then once they prove themselves out, there's no holding them back. So good luck.
Thank you. Really appreciate it.
All right, man.
Okay, take care.
You've been listening to Equity Gurus, A Closer Look. See you next time.
Thanks for listening. For disclosure statements and more info, please visit www.equity.guru.